but just again the potential tonnage that could come out of this zone. Projects that we compare to, if people aren't familiar, the Grenville province, which is a geological province that covers Labrador and Quebec, as well as the Appalachians and things like that. It's known for these VTM style deposits, and so there's a few others that are located in Quebec, not too far from us. And then our uranium project sits about 25 kilometers south of Paladin Nathah Energy, two companies that arguably have the largest discovered deposits in eastern Canada outside the Athabasca Basin. We've got an 18-kilometer strike on that project, confirmed uraninite staining on the pegmatites, confirmed uranophane staining on the pegmatites, and uraninite mineral hosted within the pegmatites across the 18 kilometers. Fantastic surface mineralization and uranium count radiometrics that all point to a very similar large tonnage potential as we're finding and seeing in the Michelin project that Paladin Energy has north of us. So, that project's obviously prime and ready for a bull run in uranium, which we could see as early as next year.
Good day today. We've got Mike Steer, CEO of Saga Metals. Mike, it's a pleasure having you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Mike, you've got a unique company with multiple projects, multiple mineralization emphasis. I would like to start with the Radar Titanium project. You sent an update out recently, and you've had, I guess, first three drill holes out in the Trapper Zone. If you can tell us about that, the results. What do they tell you about the grade or the scale that you think you might have?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're actually nearing the completion of our fourth hole. I think by the time we put out that news release, we were about 200 meters into hole number four. So off to a phenomenal start. Progressing through each of these holes, I think faster than we anticipated. Really, what these current four holes mean, or what it signifies, is that we've now confirmed mineralization and bookended 16 kilometers of our oxide layering trend. So, let me back up for a second. We did a 2,200 meter drill program on our Hawkeye zone earlier this year. That it was very, very, very successful. We confirmed high grades of iron, titanium, vanadium, and really validated that this is what you'd refer to as a vanadiferous titanomagnetite deposit, or VTM, if you will. And so now, moving over to the Trapper Zone, we always felt that through the regional geophysics and some of the surface sampling that we did in prior years, that this other zone further to the west was probably more significant and had more potential for just a higher degree of tonnage potential. And so we wanted to move over to that area. We did a lot of infrastructure upgrades this past summer in terms of clearing out the old forestry road and creating a 4 kilometer access trail along the oxide layering strike. So what that allowed us to be able to do was, this program, we were able to completely eliminate the use of a helicopter, significantly reducing our downtime and our moves from hole to hole. So, whereas maybe a drill move would have taken 24 hours plus, we're now doing it in 2 hours and moving on to the next hole. We're obviously not able to see grade inside the holes that are coming out of the ground right now. However, you can identify certain levels of magnetite content. What your viewers can see is we've posted some videos and some images and some of the new recent news releases that highlight what's called a magnet pen that we stick to the core. And when you see that standing straight up on the core, that's identifying that it's highly magnetic, which is obviously exactly what we're looking for. And I think the thing that gives us a lot of confidence is that all of our samples to date, whether it be soil, rock sample, or drill core from the Hawkeye Zone have all had the same consistent correlation of iron, titanium, and vanadium, very significant critical minerals, that North America needs to shore up here. And so, we'll probably start to have some assays come back, I would say, in the next 4 to 6 weeks. We'll send two holes at a time, and then it'll kind of just keep rolling after that.
Mike, based off, the early results, that we'd love to see if first of all, are things surprised? Has anything surprised you at all? Or is it kind of like what you would expect? And then if you can tell us about the titanium, vanadium, iron systems that maybe you can compare this to other projects that maybe what you might be expecting about the potential.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the thing that really surprised us, within the first four drill holes coming out of the Trapper Zone, is really just the sheer quantity and sheer thickness of magnetite that we're seeing within the core. We obviously had a very high degree of certainty that it was there, but again, bringing it back to the Hawkeye Zone, we had about 200 meters of what we call rhythmic banding, and so. You'll get a section of magnetite layering, and then you'll get a section of silicate banding, and then magnetite again. Whereas what we're seeing in the core so far in the Trapper Zone is, within hole 8 and hole 9, we're seeing 156 meters and 165 meters respectively of continuous magnetite content, which is just, far greater than really anything we ever could have imagined. And so it's just, again, signifying just how a thick this oxide layer could be, but just again the potential tonnage that could come out of this zone. Projects that we compare to, if people aren't familiar, the Grenville province, which is a geological province that covers Labrador and Quebec, as well as the Appalachians and things like that. It's known for these VTM style deposits, and so there's a few others, that are located in Quebec, not too far from us, that have either pre-feasibility or feasibility studies. To kind of put it into perspective for viewers, those studies do a net present value of the project based on potential future cash flows should they get into production. They all sit within, close to 2 billion to 6.5 billion as far as net present value is concerned. Another one that we like to compare to is the Pengzhou deposit in China. It's about 1.3 billion tons, supplies the world with over 40% of vanadium production, and has about 0.3% concentrate. And so, we look at that from the perspective of what we could become in terms of the tonnage we hope to be able to prove out on our project. I would say the major benefit that we have over many of these projects is that we have a much more simplified mineralogy, which really sets the stage for a more simplified metallurgical process, which is the key for ensuring that you can actually extract these elements and have an economic, saleable mineral into the downstream real-world applications that we use these critical minerals for. And so that's just a huge benefit for the radar project.
Mike, you touched upon the radar project, which is mostly titanium and vanadium, VTM, iron, and that's in Labrador, Canada. You've also got three other projects that seems to have a wide variety of mineralizations that you're going after. Could you tell us a little bit more about those? And if you can actually start with the jurisdiction and what kind of how friendly are the jurisdictions there?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe I'll just step back for a moment and just kind of explain what Saga Metals is all about. Myself and Michael Garrigan, our Chief Geological Officer, we founded Saga Metals back in 2023, around the idea of identifying top-tier jurisdictions with the high potential for critical minerals. That's what brought us to Quebec and Labrador. They are top-tier jurisdictions within North America, obviously very pro exploration and mining and efficient permitting processes and all the rest of it. We've had no issues in advancing our projects to date, and obviously doing everything that we can to ensure that everything continues to move swiftly and efficiently. So that, our lithium asset is the one that's in James Bay. We have optioned that to Rio Tinto for a they can earn up to 75% of that project by putting $44 million into the ground. They've also committed up to about $750,000 in terms of cash payments to our treasury, which is non-dilutive funding for the company, and obviously a major benefit to shareholders. So them being operators of that project has allowed the focus on our Labrador projects, one being an iron project in the Labrador Trough, kind of up near Schefferville, which is located across the border into Quebec. And then our uranium project sits about 25 kilometers south of Paladin Nathah Energy, two companies that arguably have the largest discovered deposits in Eastern Canada outside the Athabasca Basin. We've got an 18-kilometer strike on that project, confirmed uraninite staining on the pegmatites, confirmed uraninite, sorry, uranophane staining on the pegmatites, and uraninite mineral hosted within the pegmatites across the 18 kilometers. Fantastic surface mineralization and uranium count radiometrics that all point to a very similar large tonnage potential as we're finding and seeing in the Michelin project that Paladin Energy has north of us. So, that project's obviously prime and ready for a bull run in uranium, which we could see as early as next year. And really, the benefit of all of this is that we felt it was an advantage to give shareholders the ability to have access to multiple critical minerals within one company. But not one that's chasing these critical minerals all over the planet. That doesn't really make for, efficient exploration. You have to have multiple teams to manage that. We're able to manage all of these projects from a centralized hub within Labrador. Our uranium project is only about 150 kilometers away from our radar project. So running back-to-back programs or simultaneous programs is well within our grasp and something that we've actually already done. And so we're able to keep ticking boxes, keep de-risking, and keep developing these projects in stride while we focus on obviously developing the resource at the radar project.
Mike, can you tell us about the infrastructure in the area, what the transportation and resources and kind of how that cuts costs, as well as a little bit about your team and just the kind of the background that they have and the experience they bring?
Yeah, absolutely. As far as the radar project is concerned, again, we're obviously not only excited about what we're seeing and what the core that's coming out of the drill, but the fact that we have such exceptional infrastructure around that project is really exciting in terms of being able to advance and develop this and for it to potentially one day become something, in terms of a mine and get into production. We have a highway that runs right into the town of Cartwright. Local town of about 500 residents. We do hire and have hired some of the local residents to work with our team. Typically, on any program, about 50 to 70% of our team will be made up of local residents. There's a road that runs right into the heart of our project and right into the mineralized zones. That's a hard packed gravel road, and then we've got an old forest road that runs to the west, heading to the trapper zone. That's what I mentioned earlier, that we've cleared all of that. We created an access trail into our trapper zone, and obviously it makes for a very efficient drill program that where we can move the drill along skids pulled by a 25-ton excavator. Additionally, within the town, we've got access to a deep water port. There's a local airstrip, as well as nearby hydroelectric power, which comes off of Churchill Falls. I think it's about the second largest hydroelectric dam in North America. So again, a lot of advantages for where we are. Great community support. Our chief geological officer, Michael Garrigan, he's a 20-year exploration geologist. He's worked all over the world. He's never seen the level of support that we're seeing out of a community, that has a project nearby with such high potential. So very encouraging, very exciting for us. We continue to keep that engagement up. His background, he actually comes from a family of geologists. His father was one of the original members of B2 Gold Corp. Longtime, very successful geologist. His mother's a geologist, brother's a geologist. So as you can imagine, he spent a lot of time growing up in these exploration camps, got to see it firsthand. And then dove right into the career as an adult. And so we benefit from that that longevity and experience. Adding to our team more recently, we've added Dr. Al Miller. He's an expert in petrology. He's done some work on our radar project as well as our uranium project not too far away. That's how we were able to confirm the uraninite within the pegmatites on our uranium project. As well as Paul McQuiggan, he's our PGO for the radar project. Longtime career in these VTM style deposits. Very, very experienced. He's been a great guiding hand as we get into our indicated mineral resource here. So again, I credit Michael Garrigan for surrounding us with a team of experts and just a team that's really dedicated to advancing and developing these projects and. Yeah, looking forward to obviously finishing up this drill program.
Mike, you've spoken a little bit about how these four projects have what they have in common, just kind of your philosophy about bringing value. I can appreciate that. And on one hand, the diversity of the different mineralizations, I can see that being advantageous to investors because, like depending on need, if you can talk a little bit about that. And also, I guess a question I might have is, do you see it potentially having disadvantage where you have different, you're not emphasizing on just gold? Like, I don't know the differences in terms of, getting uranium versus lithium, but like, how do you overcome that? And is that an obstacle that you need to overcome?
No, I don't think so. Again, if these are projects that were based all over the world, I could see someone arguing the fact that it's really hard to logistically manage them, keep your costs in check as you're, globetrotting and trying to advance these projects. But the fact that we're able to and have been able to create one unified team that can help us, advance all of these projects in stride, I think is an incredible advantage to Saga Metals and all of our shareholders in terms of being able to, garner greater value. There's always the opportunity to sell a project down the line, do an option agreement like we did with Rio Tinto. We own that project 100%. We were able to option it to them, whereby they're obviously spending their hard dollars to advance the project, but we get the benefit of that additional data that's being garnered on that project. And of course, if they find something, we still have a respectable interest in that project, moving down the line. So, again, I don't personally view it as any kind of disadvantages there. We're able to manage everything efficiently and effectively, keeping our costs very much in check. And if you're a lithium company and you've kind of been hit the last couple of years, well, we're not hit in that same regard. Yes, we have a lithium project, but we're not a lithium company, so we don't have that same I guess stigma in the market associated with, if there's any kind of a downturn in lithium pricing or expectations or all the rest of it. We're able to advance, the Radar project as an example, and continue to create shareholder value that way. Should lithium come back in a strong way, then again, we have a very exceptional project with lots of potential that can add value to shareholders. So that's again the diversification piece. You don't have to go out and own four different companies, just own Saga Metals.
Mike, you mentioned Rio Tinto. If we can go to your capital and share structure, I would love to kind of get a quick breakdown as well as, major investors, institutions involved, what percentage of ownership consists of insiders and institutions. And along with that, if I were to ask a company like Rio Tinto or some other investors, and companies, what you guys see, like what excites you direct, what most excites you about your company, what might they say?
Yeah, so I mean, with respect to our share structure, again, Rio Tinto has provided non-dilutive capital. So the funds that they've provided us to date have gone into our treasury, but there's been no shares issued to them in that regard. So a huge benefit, obviously, to shareholders to receive cash into the company for a junior company that obviously doesn't expect to generate revenue, we do need to find ways to obviously bring cash in. Anytime that you can do that without touching your capitalization structure is a major benefit. Over the last few years, we've obviously gotten participation from some fairly prominent resource funds like Alpha North and Pathfinder and the likes. I obviously haven't sat down to work out the different breakdown of ownership between the different groups. All I can say is we've got a fantastic shareholder base. We've had new participants in each of the financings, but in many cases, we've had some of the similar shareholders that have been with us from day one. And ones that have been around in the last year or year two that have re-upped and continued to participate at different levels. So we've been able to raise about $12 million to date. We've got a life offering right now that's actually oversubscribed, and we've fully filled up the overallotment with a book of about $6 million. Which is fantastic. It's going to allow us to be able to secure and get back right to the drill in January and finish our resource program on the Radar project. And we've been able to keep our capitalization structure extremely tight. We're still I think only sitting at about 58 million shares to date on that $12 million raised, which if you do the math has been a very effective way of managing that. Even for what we're about to issue for the 6 million shares, again, it's still keeping it very much in check. We'll be around maybe 70 million shares outstanding, with almost $20 million raised to date. So not every company is obviously able to say that, and anytime you're able to manage your structure and make sure that there are good shareholders behind you and you don't have undue pressure, there's a lot of potential and opportunity for incoming investors.
Mike, looking out 2-3 years from now, what does success look like for Mike Steer? If you can tell us about your key value drivers and maybe upside potential that you see and what you realistically hope you might get.
Yeah, for sure. So, obviously my success is the success of Saga Metals. That's what myself and Michael Garrigan live and breathe every day. At the end of the day, we're not set out to be the mining company that's going to come in and actually pull all the ore out of ground and sent to your midstream processing. We do endeavor to be able to prove out these projects. I think that's what we specialize in, finding these overlooked or underexplored opportunities within top-tier jurisdictions, prove them out and sell them to obviously much larger, bigger companies that are already well established and well entrenched in the mining space. Our niche is obviously in the exploration aspect of this. And that's truly where I think that we can hone in and drive the most value for our shareholders. There's obviously always that lag and delay that once you've proven a resource out, now you have to get it into production. Now you have to get into revenue and profitability. Whereas for our shareholders, I think capturing that value and selling these projects to a major company will really be where that key driver sits. So, starting with the Radar project, again, we're obviously endeavoring to finish off our indicated mineral resource drill program in the first half of 2026, and then be able to put out that technical report in the second half of 2026. So to call it 2 years from now or less, success, I think, for Saga Metals is selling our first project to a major company and having a very big win for shareholders that, then we can move on and replicate that with the other projects that we have in our portfolio.
Mike, you mentioned some timelines and milestones. If you can tell us how, first of all, do you have any other news that we can look forward to? And then how can people follow your news? And then if you can leave us with your ticker, where you're trading, and how people can reach you.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone that obviously wants to follow us, just go to sagametals.com. You can go to the contact page or down at the bottom in the footer, you can put in your name, your email address, your phone number. You can also click a button to request a call from investor relations. As far as news flow is concerned, we have tons of news to come really over the next 12 months. It's not going to stop. As the drills are turning right now, We're going to continue to have updates on the holes that are completed. We're doing metallurgical work right now on the core from our Hawkeye program. We'll continue to have news that comes out associated with that. As core comes out of the trapper zone, it'll be sent for assaying. So not only will we have the assays coming back from that core, but we'll also begin metallurgical work on the core coming out of the trapper zone. And we're going to obviously continue to drive towards that indicated mineral resource. So there'll be further news associated with that. There's also going to be some work that we will have to do on the other projects. There's always claim maintenance every year that we have to do to maintain that and continue to develop them. Obviously, it's on a much smaller scale than the radar project, but nevertheless, you'll be able to benefit from news and updates on those programs as well.
Mike, if you can tell us your ticker and where you're trading.
Yeah, absolutely. So we trade on the TSX Venture Exchange in Canada under SAGA. Very easy to remember. It's just Saga. We also trade on the OTCQB under the symbol SAGMF, as well as Frankfurt under the symbol 20H.
So for our listeners, full disclosure, I am not an investor of Saga Metals yet. Although that may change, Mike and Saga has not paid for this interview, and so I can't give investment advice. But you please do your own due diligence, and one of the ways to do that is to follow these tickers as well as reach out to Mike or visit the website. I will put the links in the no show notes. Please reach out to Mike if you have any questions. Mike, thank you so much for your time, for telling us more about Saga Metals, and for anyone interested, I hope they benefit from that. And hope to have you back and continue to follow your story.
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks. Take care.